Welcome to Carittles. This is Wendy.
And this is Amanda.
Today's cast, time management and the high D, part two.
The questions this cast answers are, what are high D's weaknesses when it comes to time management? What can a high D do to mitigate their weaknesses? And how can high D's improve their time management skills?
If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Career Tools listeners, we have some exciting news to share. As your dedicated career partners, we are thrilled to announce a game-changing opportunity that will offer you a distinct pathway to professional success. We're launching three distinct licenses: the Career Tools License, the Manager Tools License, and the Executive Tools License. Each is specifically designed to provide resources and benefits tailored to your current career stage. And here's the best part. If you're considering becoming a licensee or are due for a renewal, acting now could be incredibly advantageous. Purchase or renew your license before we launch, and you'll receive enhanced benefits at a lower price. How great is that? For existing licensees, keep an eye on your inbox for emails detailing how to seize this opportunity. We're genuinely excited about how this will empower your career growth. We're sharing this early because we don't want you to miss out. Your success drives us, and we're eager to give you every possible advantage. Thank you for being part of our community. We can't wait to embark on this new chapter of your career journey together.
Let's talk about that overcommitting. In fact, don't overcommit. All the styles we know are liable to overcommit, and each do this for a very different reason. The high D's mantra is, I can do that. So their natural desire to lead and be seen as capable makes them say yes to the new tasks before they even thought about what they're currently working on. I would say that they say, yes, I can do that. And yes, I don't want you to do that.
Yes.
Is the other reason they say yes to everything.
I want to do that. Right?
I mean, I know what you all are really thinking. Like, no, I'm going to do that so they don't. And that's fine.
I can do that better than you too.
Yeah, that's more of the, I don't trust that you can do it, so I'm just going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they add this goal, and they don't really think about what they're currently working on or what they need to go from here. So they're going to struggle to say no to these opportunities, especially when there's potential for achievement or recognition. And the fact that they make decisions quickly, which we all know our high Ds do, kind of is a recipe for never saying no. Because you want to say yes, you want the recognition, you don't want other people to do it because you can do it better. And then you just say yes to everything and you don't know how to say no.
And you don't have a written plan. So you have no idea what you're doing 3 weeks from now when somebody's just asked you to do something. So you just say yes. Again, ask me how I know. And the other thing is when you're in a group and somebody says, who will do this? The high D always says, I will. Because they hate the silence. I hate the silence. I'm just like, if nobody's going to say yes, I'm just going to say yes, because let's get on with this. Let's move on. Like, can we just do something?
Also, so the meeting ends sooner.
Exactly.
Like if we get these silence pauses over, we get done sooner.
Exactly. Can we get out of this meeting and I can go and do something more productive? Yeah. And the assertive style, so D and I in DISC, believe that they can control their environment. And for high Ds, that includes time itself. I believe, that we can force tasks to fit into the day through sheer willpower, much like squeezing an elephant into a phone booth. And we've said this, when a high D is asked, how will you get that done? They often just say, work harder. And while this is a viable short-term solution, it doesn't work in the long term because, as I just said, high Ds are human beings too.
Yeah, and people miss you. I know. I'm gonna say it because we do. Now, one way to avoid overcommitment is to avoid the reflexive, yes, I'll do it, and instead buy yourself time to make that decision. In most cases, the person who's asking you would like an instant response, but they don't really expect it. Ask if you can get back to them when you've checked your other commitments, those long-term strategy plans, and then take time to think about whether this new opportunity is going to compromise the achievement of your existing goals. By taking on that extra responsibility, are you risking failure in what you've already committed to?
I remember at least two of the other styles, S and C, would also like time, way more time than you do, to make a decision about whether or not they take on an extra task. So when you ask for time, you are doing what they would do. So they are not surprised or at all put out that you want more time to make a decision, even though you would be.
I would say high C's would love you to take more time to make that decision.
Yes, they would rather you take me time and make the right decision. Yeah. Another thing is build strong relationships. Another not strong point of high D's, but if you have strong relationships, you can reduce the need for saying yes and the need for doing the work if you've already said yes. It's much easier to say no to someone who you have a good relationship with, in part because you know the alternatives that they have to get the work done. If your boss asks you to do work, your natural instinct is to say yes. But if you know that your boss has three other people who they can ask who are less busy than you, it's much easier to say no. And the same with if you've got a relationship with the person elsewhere in the organization who's asking you to do something, or the customer or whoever it is, the more you know about that person and the alternatives they have, if you're comfortable that they have other alternatives to get the work done, it's much easier to say no. And if you have taken work on, if you have good relationships with other people, it's much easier to say, hey, can you help me out? Hey, I'm really busy. Would you mind doing this for me? Could you just do this so that I can do that? It's much easier to do that when you developed a relationship with someone and you know that you've done them some favors in the past. That makes it easier to rely on people when you've overloaded yourself.
I think when it comes to building relationships too, it has that certain level of trust, mm-hmm. right? High D's tend to keep tasks because they don't trust that other people are going to do it. And when you build relationships, when you know that you can, in fact, trust those folks to take on work or to help you with work because you know that they'll do a good job or they have your back, that trust is a huge, huge component to make you more willing to ask for help when you trust the other people.
Or that you have a good enough relationship to say, hey, that wasn't quite what I meant. Would you do it again? Or could you just tweak it and do this? Because part of the angst is I'll give it to them and they'll do it wrong. And then if I don't have a good relationship, I'll end up redoing it myself because I don't want to tell them they did it wrong. Whereas if you have a good relationship, you can say, hey, that's not quite what I meant. Will you do it again?
Yeah. And there are many analytical tools that can help you analyze your time and commitments to give you a more realistic idea of what you have available. The Drucker time analysis, capacity calculators, and the Eisenhower matrix, just to name a few. Though the exercise is tedious, it does give you an unemotional answer to, can I do this? So not only building those relationships, avoiding overcommitment, but having a way to analyze exactly how much time you have or you've committed to, it's that unemotional, helpful tech. You can do the process and then someone else can tell you, or the tool will tell you if you can do it or not. So use these systems to avoid overcommitment. Heidi's are probably the first people on the team to say, do you want me to do the work or update the tracker to say I've done the work? Because they hate the redundancy of both having to do the work and tracking the work. However, using these systems are useful in the fact that they provide another check as to the amount of time you have available and the amount of additional tasks you take on and still do well.
Right. If your team has some kind of tracker for all of the work that you're doing, like the team member most likely to say to their boss, do you want me to do the work or update the tracker when the boss says you haven't updated your tasks in 3 weeks is the high D. But if you are updating the tracker, at least you know this is your list of tasks. Can you take on something else? If you've got 50 tasks and the limit of what any one person can do in a week is 40, you know that you can't say yes to something else without compromising the things that you've already got. And it's worse, I think, to fail on the quality of the things that you've already got than to take on something else, or than to say no to something else.
Are you feeling stuck in your current role, or are trying to make the jump from more senior manager into a director or more executive role? You may want to engage with Manager Tools and Mark Horstman for executive coaching. Mark will meet with you once per week with stated objectives and actions to get you to the next level. Sometimes it's basic managerial behaviors that need implementing, but often it's the nuance of executive life where external factors matter and need more focus. If you'd like more information, contact Maggie at customerservice@manager-tools.com for more details.
Okay, so next, adopt routines to take care of minor tasks. So we have a strategy called delegating to the floor, which there is a podcast about. And basically, delegating to the floor means if you're an individual contributor and you have too much work to do, there is a perfectly professional and legal strategy called delegating to the floor, where you delegate your work that you're not going to do to the floor and you just don't do it. It's my favorite strategy. The floor is completely useless, but you do have to prioritize your tasks first. You have to go and talk to your boss about them. You have to make sure you're only delegating the most unimportant tasks to the floor, but it is a perfectly professional and legal strategy.
Yeah, it also helps you like create a list of what is important. So going back to creating a plan, having your long-term strategy, even just the activity of going through the process of if you need to delegate something to the floor, it really does help put things in perspective of why are you doing these tasks? How important are they to our overall goal? And sometimes it can surprise you of where you would put things at on a list to help you limit or make those kind of work stop work decisions. Again, go through your boss. Don't just do things all willy-nilly.
So there are things that you can delegate to the floor, but there are mundane routine tasks that have to be done, especially in large organizations, corporate organizations, tasks that cannot be delegated to the floor.
But I wish they could be. Just kidding.
Yeah, things like expenses, security badges, upgrading software, they're boring. They interrupt the more important goal-oriented work. And so we procrastinate on them, assuming that the consequences of not doing them either will never come or that the impact will be small because they're unimportant tasks that other people do. We don't do them.
Yeah, it's a later problem. It always is. And then it snowballs. And so you know that this is a mistake. While these tasks may be small when they first are required, when they're left for weeks and months, they tend to build up on one another until dealing with them becomes a significant amount of time out of your day. That snowball effect, if you just leave it, you're like, no, it'll get done. It'll get done. You're like, oh my gosh, this is going to take me way longer than if I would have just done it when it was first thought of. So what really happens is that all these things build up and now you're on someone else's schedule because they're telling you when it needs to be done. And that impacts what you're currently working on because you have to stop what you're doing. And now you're on someone else's time and things do have to get done. And it becomes a bigger deal when, again, if you would have just done it when it first needed to do, even though they're the smaller tasks that don't seem as important, just checking them off, having them in your list of things to do can be very impactful, or else you're going to get stuck doing it when you want to be doing something else. That's probably a lot more significant
to
and
you.
You're going to overwork, right?
Yeah, exactly. So to effectively manage routine tasks, create a regular daily time slot for handling them. Implement daily and weekly checklists because that can help you streamline the process. If you have a checklist and you can just bang through it, it makes doing those tasks much quicker. Ensure that the routine tasks don't mount up and become overwhelming and treat them with the same urgency and focus as any other task that you have on your checklist. One thing that Heidi's love is checking off tasks. So look at that list as a, how can I get through these as quickly as possible, but without doing the thing you do where you skip over the quality and skip over the details. You have to actually get them right, but how fast can you do them? treat them like every other important responsibility you have. So do them well, but check them off. That way you minimize the time that you spend on them, but it also feels like fast, decisive action. And if you do it first thing in the morning, it's like, I just got 20 things done and it only took me 13 minutes. That's an awesome way to start the day. Yeah. So if you look at them as tasks to be efficiently completed rather than annoying interruptions, that's a really good way to start the day.
Now, when considering adopting new processes, procedures, checklists, or even automation tools, know that you can look into it yourself or you can work smart and talk to your high C's because they are the folks that know how to increase their efficiency. They probably already have processes, procedure, or the newest tech to help you do things. So yes, you could try it on your own or leverage, hopefully, the relationships that you've built and go to your high C because they probably have some really good insight. These different methods will allow you to spend a minimum amount of time and brain power on those routine tasks and more time on the tasks that actually get you to your goal. So leverage
that's the
those
aim.
Tools to get more of your other stuff done.
Yes. Right? Okay, last one. Go slow to go fast. So high Ds need to move fast and take action, which often leads them to miss important information. Again, ask me how I know. We often misread emails, give the wrong answer, or address completely the wrong question. Alternatively, they may delete emails they think are unimportant, only to find that they were important later. In meetings, their desire to leave as soon as possible results in incomplete note-taking and insufficient questioning. So we just don't ask enough questions because we want to leave. And then we find that there was that one important question that we didn't ask, and we've done a whole bunch of work, and it was useless because we didn't ask the right question. And then we get really angry with the person because they didn't tell us that thing. But it's not their fault, it's our fault because we wanted to get out of the meeting quickly and we didn't ask the question.
And Wendy, I just love that as we're reading and talking about a lot of these things, you're laughing because I can tell you're thinking that exact moment in time, you're like, no, I've done this more than once, right?
Yeah.
So you hear us kind of chuckling because I bet Wendy has definitely been in this situation probably this week.
Yes.
I would say. And it's only
Tuesday lunchtime.
Yeah. So it's not, you're not missing any inside jokes. It's
no, it's Wendy literally me laughing at myself. Times. Yes.
Now, the solution to these problems is to slow down, read thoroughly, listen properly, take comprehensive notes, and ask enough questions. Given that this is easier said than done, here are some strategies to help you achieve this. First, read and answer emails during a specific set time that you've set aside on your calendar so you're not doing it while you're multitasking or in the moments in between meetings, that it's actually set time on your calendar where you can thoroughly look through, read, respond, know that you are invested in that email time. It doesn't have to be very long, but does have to be set aside for just that. Not multitasking, not on your phone when you're walking to your next meeting because we know what you're doing. Right? Set it aside.
Try not to answer emails at stoplights. Just saying. Likelihood
it
of
might
you
be
missing...
illegal.
Just
depending
saying.
On where you're driving.
You might miss something important. List out the questions you need answered before a meeting and make sure that you get the answers. And if it's a part of something that repeats a lot, then use a template or a checklist to make sure that you get all of the answers. And make sure you don't skip them because you think, oh, this isn't relevant to this project. Just get every answer because if you get them all, isn't that a Pokemon thing? Catch them all. Anyway, if you
gotta catch them all.
If you get all of the answers, the likelihood of you working on the wrong thing is much lower.
Handwrite your notes. Stick with me here. This forces you to not only slow down, but it forces you to listen to what is being said. And there's numerous studies that show that handwritten notes are more effective when it comes to only being able to focus on what is being said to write it down. So I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, a little controversial. We also have a podcast that helps cover some of this data, but it's more effective. Not necessarily the most efficient, but it'll help you focus if you're missing a lot of that information.
Ask someone else to read important documents and look for errors for you, or even unimportant documents if you are likely to go too fast and not see things. I would volunteer you, Amanda, because you often read my stuff, but then you would be inundated. So you can't have Amanda, but find your colleague of your own who's good at reading things for you. I often ask Amanda.
Yeah, they probably have high S tendencies. They'll do anything for you.
Yes.
And give yourself time to put tasks aside once you've completed them and before you have to submit them. Even if you can only leave them for an hour, looking at them fresh may help you see the errors. So don't get it done and submit it because, yes, you beat that deadline. I know, very exciting. You feel very accomplished. Give yourself just a little bit of time to reread it or relook it over because it's amazing what you can find with a fresh set of eyes. Kind of back to the point of having someone else look it over for errors, even just giving yourself a break for even an hour before you submit something, you can find a lot that you might want to change or adjust or a second set of eyes, essentially.
Yeah, it's amazing that that draft thing in emails is amazingly useful. If you put something in draft and then come back to it later, even an hour later, it's amazing how much more receptive the person receiving your email could be if you reword it after an hour. So being a high D is not a strength or a weakness. It's not a good thing or a bad thing, any more than being a high I or an S or a C is. You can be anything you want. You can act any way you want if you think about it first. All of the things that we've described high Ds doing are the things that we do when we're not thinking about it. They're the things that we would do at the weekend because we don't think about behaving in any particular way when we're in our house at the weekend. But when you're at work and you want to be efficient and effective and you want to get things done and you want the rewards for getting things done, then there are ways to get around things, get around the behaviors that don't help you. And that's what we've been telling you how to do. Sometimes our natural behaviors don't help us get to the place we want to get to. And we can change them. And using our time effectively means we get to the goal faster. And that's, as high Ds, that's what we want. And so if changing our behavior gets us to the goals faster, then it's worth changing our behavior. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.